Patrick Walker. I'm the Director of Video Partnerships for YouTube in Europe, Middle East, and Africa.
So you have a very sophisticated video fingerprinting system working on YouTube that's designed to protect copyrighted material. Could you just give a very brief overview of sort of how that works, in essence?
Okay. We've always provided means by which rights holders can inform us of a content on YouTube they would like to have removed. And that has in the past been a process that would include, say, sending us an email with a link to the video, or we have, you know, batch processing software and technology people could use. But what we've launched now with Video ID allows them to provide a video reference file, and then that reference file is in itself automatically matched against all the videos uploaded onto YouTube. And we get about 13 hours of video uploaded every minute of every day, so it's a lot of video. So a video reference file, let's say of a TV program or a music video, will, on a frame-by-frame basis, be matched against every video that's uploaded. And when a match is made, the rights holder can, in advance of any match being made, set a business rule around what happens next. Or they can be notified and allow them to make a choice as to what happens next. The choices could be to have that content automatically removed from the system and therefore never appear on the site. It could be to track it for marketing purposes just to see how the clip does. And it can be also to monetize it, meaning we run ads against that content.
Now, is this in response to requests from rights holders who want more content? I mean, I'm obviously aware that the Viacom case is sort of, you know, hanging over Google, and that's not resolved yet. Was this a product of that partly?
We've always had an ongoing commitment to copyright protection, and there's been a roadmap in place for a long time. It's part of an ongoing evolution of the tools. It wasn't like some snap decision, let's go do this based in reaction to anything. It was, let's always make it quicker, more intelligent, more automated, and easier for rights holders to use. And so it's part of a natural evolution of that. It's been in place since the end of last year in North America, and we launched it in Europe here about 6 months ago or so. And we're localizing it. You can even sign up online for it. The whole idea behind it is to make the overall system easier to use and more intelligent, and much more accessible to people. But it also is providing a very flexible way for them to apply different business models. The platform continues to improve based on partner feedback and non-partner feedback and people that we speak to in the industry to help us tweak it and make it more intelligent and more suitable for their type of content, let's say sports content or music content. But the roadmap has been in place for a long time. This technology, though, you know, takes a while to develop. Even in the last few months, we've moved from taking 8 hours to match an uploaded video relative to a reference file to 15 minutes, and it always gets shorter, and it gets faster, and it gets smarter.
It seems that there's been an increased demand for the service to be able to make money for people, or rather they've wanted to put ads on in the last 6 months. I mean, what specifically has happened in the last 6 months to the service that's made it more attractive to people? Is there an element of the economic downturn here and people looking to monetize as much as they can?
I think generally speaking, the industry is looking for new ways to generate income. They love the promotional opportunity. They love the ability to interact with users and have a direct link and feedback from the people out there in every country regarding their content. But there is pressure on everyone these days to try and make these promotional and large-scale distribution opportunities, you know, new business opportunities. And so, again, I mean, it's an ongoing roadmap for us to introduce new ad formats that support that objective, which is also our objective in time. But always trying to balance it out with the right user experience. And so the tricky bit is to continuously provide new revenue opportunities and appropriate ad formats for the platform, while at the same time making YouTube a very fun and enjoyable and non-intrusive environment for video sharing.
So what's the appeal for companies that are very particular about how they like their content to be presented? I mean, why have they suddenly had this change of heart and thought, well, you know, people that have uploaded, you know, bad quality copies of our stuff, we're suddenly going to let them do it and we're going to put adverts on? I mean, how much control do they really have over their stuff?
Well, they have full control. And it's funny, people use it in very different ways. There are those like Monty Python who are doing it in a way to say, guess what? Okay, you know, we know you love our stuff. You know, okay, you win. We're going to put our stuff on now officially onto YouTube, and we're going to run ads against it. And please click on our DVD links and buy our stuff. But at the same time, when they realize that by embracing content, they can actually increase the overall inventory quite considerably. That presents an even better commercial opportunity. They tend to, in some cases, I'm not saying this is the case for Monty Python, but in some partner cases, they tend to say, well, actually, okay, if this is what the users want and they're quite happy with that version, then and we can run ads against it, then great. We've seen partners increase their overall view count, you know, in the some cases, 10x or even 100x, based on the beginning of claiming actions using the tools.
How much money are partners really going to make through this, though? I mean, YouTube obviously has an enormous audience, and the way this system works, if there are 10 copies of the same clip, the publisher can claim all of those. But are we still just talking pennies?
It really depends. I mean, every individual rights holder has a different amount of content, different type of content that might have geo restrictions in certain markets and not in other markets. And also how much money is a lot of money really does vary by each publisher. It has to do with, what it costs to clear the rights. It has to do with the cost of production. As people are moving in some cases with new types of content that's at a much lower production cost, the income looks pretty good to them right now. In terms of replacing slowly diminishing traditional revenue streams, not quite there yet, but they see an increase. They see a trend on a month-by-month basis of a growth in that revenue. And so we're working together collaboratively to make it, in time, a substantial part of their digital business, and hopefully their digital strategy continuously support this sort of platform.
And how does this sort of platform sit alongside the growth of publishers' sort of proprietary video platforms? And obviously Hulu is doing really well in the States. Is the thinking that publishers should just be on as many platforms as possible, or do they need to be slightly more focused than that?
Most of the publishers are understanding that you can never possibly attract every potential customer to your site, and that there's enormous marketing dollar needed if you ever did want to do so. And so more and more of them are pushing the content out to the edges where people gather. And then if they're happy with the business terms of every particular relationship, then they can naturally, and should be, I would think, engaging and experimenting on lots of different platforms. This gives user a choice to consume that media in the environment that they feel suits their own needs the best with regard to user interface and so forth. And the experiences are also very different. So I may go to one website because they have high quality, long form, download to buy or different sorts of engagement with content, but I go to YouTube to search, find, enjoy, share, comment, rate, and then maybe I'll link off to the broadcaster website to get a different experience or to go deeper or to look back at past episodes. Every publisher uses YouTube for different reasons. Some of them are promotional in nature, to link back to their websites. Even Hulu has their own channel on YouTube where they link back to the full-length episodes. They might use it for distribution to territories where they don't have any particular presence. So they might block their content in the UK because they have their own website, but then they'll use YouTube to distribute in Latin America, North America, and Asia. They might use it for research purposes, where they're getting a lot of data through our insight tools on what the demographics are, and then they use that for other purposes to support their businesses. And then there's the income opportunity. And these days, I don't think anyone really wants to commit to one stream of revenue. I think people have understood that non-exclusive is a good way to go, and being open and pushing your content out is a good way to go. And then based on experimentation with several different platforms, they might decide to focus their energies on one or two of them that are really meeting their needs.
Well, thinking about how publishers are always looking for alternative revenue streams, it seems the click-to-buy system is the next logical step for YouTube. You recently introduced this in the US to some types of content, but can you explain that, and can you give us any indication of whether that might be launched in the UK soon?
Yeah, I mean, in addition to using Video ID to claim content and increase your overall inventory, which is becoming quite an important way to grow the revenue potential, Click-to-buy offers rights holders, in the short term, particularly the record labels, an ability to convert a free streamed video view on YouTube to a retail purchase on a download store like iTunes or through Amazon or others. So what we've introduced with Click-to-buy is on the page where the video is consumed, on YouTube, there's a link that says, if you'd like to buy this track, click here, and then it links through to the iTunes page or the Amazon page. We'll be launching that in Europe as well with other retailers. Because users consume media in different ways depending on where they are. YouTube is streaming, sit down, enjoy it, maybe send the link to your friend opportunity. But if you want to take that on the train with you and put it on your iPod or on your other MP3 device, you're going to want to go somewhere where you can own that content. So it's very complementary, and we think this will be a good way to help support businesses beyond just through our ad rev share opportunity. And this doesn't apply just to music videos, but it applies to DVD sales. We're hoping to extend that over time to, say, ticket sales, even merchandise. So it's just the beginning, I think, of a whole new type of revenue opportunity.